We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
What up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. This week's episode of the Corner is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. You know, me and Andreas are always covering events, we're always writing articles, but when we do have time to sleep, we lay our head down on a nice, pillowy, soft, premium mattress from Casper Mattresses. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and going straight to you. No showrooms, no middleman. Everyone's seen those creepy guys trying to follow you around the department store. None of that anymore. You get your hands on a nice premium mattress by going straight to Casper Mattresses.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got to get my rest. So Casper Mattresses is the goods. I'm telling you right now. So listen, you can get $50 off of any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/the corner and entering the promo code the corner. That's one word, the corner. That's Casper.com/the corner, promo code THECORNER. Terms and conditions apply.
What up, everybody? We're back again. It's been a while. 2 weeks away, leaving you guys without the most amazing podcast in combat sports. That's right. Right here, the Corner Podcast is back. Me, Kel Dansby, him, old man Andreas Hale, bringing you the best in combat sports, hip-hop, pop culture, everything you want to talk about. We've been kind of caught up and wrapped up. Man, I was sick. I had no voice 2 weeks ago. I'm still sipping tea like a real grown man right now to get through this podcast. We've been traveling. So much to catch up on. Dre, welcome back.
Yeah, I'm back.
You sound cheery. This little break seemed to have perked you up a bit.
No, not really. I mean, yeah, it's been about a week in D.C., and I missed that snowstorm. They just had a snowstorm out there. So all our D.C. listeners, shout out to you because you're enduring that snowstorm. I missed that bitch by like a day. So that's probably what I'm happy about because I did not want to be trapped out there.
Yes, so you are in D.C. I went to Atlanta between being sick and doing this podcast. So shout out to all my Atlanta people and your wax sweet tea. Every time I come back from the South, I just got to just bash sweet tea until it goes so through its ultimate deletion. I can't do it, Dre. That shit's horrible. It makes no
not
sense.
Horrible. Grow up. Be a man.
No one likes that. No one should like it. So we spent our week traveling. We missed a couple of things. Just in the world in general, one thing that I had to just pluck out of the air, just because it's been entertaining me for 2 weeks, our president is smashing a porn star, or at least smashed a porn star. You can't say that every day.
No, I mean,
what a world we live in, Dre. Our president smashed a porn star. She took a lie detector test.
I mean, I feel like Bill Clinton did the same thing. I mean, we know JFK got up in a bunch of famous guts as well. So I'm not too surprised by this. And there's people out there that are saying, well, why are we paying so much attention? It's not that it's just a porn star. It's like the hush money, the infidelity, the goddamn sexual allegations, sexual assault. Like everything with Trump is just ridiculous. And every day that I wake up and I see this man's name in the news, I'm like, Jesus Christ, him again? But like I said, before he got he's getting reelected.
He's not getting reelected. He's not getting another four, Dre. He might not make these last two.
He's going to make these last. Look, we're at two. Last year, y'all was like, he's not going to make it through one. He's at two now. He's got a ton of support. And who's going to beat him?
They'll find somebody.
No, they won't.
They're going to find somebody,
Dre. They're not.
You don't combat him with another celebrity. You don't turn this into a shit show. But you find like a legit politician.
Like who?
I think there's another Kennedy.
If you can't name him, it's not going to be Trump.
Listen, anyone with the name Kennedy, I feel pretty comfortable. At this point, a trained monkey should be Trump. But we thought that last time. Yeah.
So you're saying Hillary Clinton's worse than a trained monkey?
I think that statement has been proven true. Like, I don't know that that was just... I don't know the depths of Russian collusion, Dre. I don't know. I'm not following this shit. But my boys sending shout-outs to Putin. Live on live TV, like, yo, what up, dictator baby? Good job on that win.
He's getting reelected. Look, I don't like it any more than anybody else does, but he's got so much support. You really have to convince a bunch of people who didn't vote to go vote. And I don't see that happening.
If, nah, it's happening, man. What do you think? They're just going to forget about what's happened so far?
And doesn't the dumb matter. Shit? People are apathetic. Like, it wasn't like Clinton and Trump was necessarily close. He kind of ran her over. And Hillary Clinton was established. So you mean to tell me that if we are at 2018, and we got two more years of Trump, you mean to tell me that they're going to find a viable candidate that people would vote for over Trump? Because now you have to create dissension within the Trump supporters, which hasn't happened. Those people are not going to go against Trump in 2020.
Yo, worst case, my boy Joe Biden just got to run. I feel like
Joe Biden won't win.
You say he won't win?
No.
Oh, shit. Joe Biden lose to Trump. Yeah, it's a wrap. We can't get Ada Trump. Yo, if we get Ada Trump, he's changing every rules, and he's just going to be president for the rest of his life.
I'm just telling you what
it is. I'm just letting you know. He ain't relinquishing if he gets eight. If he get eight, he get 12.
The Democrats have to produce a candidate that is going to be a viable opponent for Trump. It's very difficult to get somebody to not reelect a president. It's very difficult. Obviously, you would think, as much as Trump does, that it makes it simple, but it's not, because the people who don't like Trump, we already didn't like Trump. So that doesn't change anything. You got to get people who don't vote to go vote, but you have to give them a reason to vote. And I know they're saying, well, look what all that Trump's done. Yeah, that's great, but you got to understand there's so many apathetic people out there. And there's so many people, like, if this election didn't show us anything else, is that how split and divided this country really is. Like, the racists have been out in full effect, like, yeehaw. Like, they are out there with their ropes and with their cowboy boots. They don't give a fuck. Look, if Dana White's still speaking at the Republican National Convention, that's not changing. Those people are going to follow the money.
I'm letting you know this. If we can make Black Panther could be the third best movie in history, grossing movie in history, we better get out there and fucking vote.
Very difficult. Very difficult task to get people to vote versus going to see a movie. Because most people still don't believe voting does anything. So how do you convince them? And on top of that, you got to look. It's Electoral College. The states that are red are going to remain red. Blue, like, there's a few swing states. Like, Ohio is always the indicator. I know we're, like, talking about politics on a combat sports show. But, like, Ohio's been a great indicator for who wins the election. And unless you can convince those people to vote for somebody else, which they probably won't, Trump is going to be here another 4 years, so buckle up. I only say this because the Democrats have produced nobody. There has not been a single person where you go, oh, he could possibly be president. It's 2018. This needs to start happening before the end of the year, where you got to say, here's a guy who can run, or a woman, doubtful, but a guy who can run and beat Trump.
Yo, I don't know. We got to get on it then. I need to get out of front of the podcast. AJ Springer on the phone. Something. Somebody has to have their ears to the street. We need to start, champion someone. We can't just wait. It's a damn shame. Four more years of Trump, Dre. I can't believe it. I couldn't believe it. He smashed in a porn star.
Yeah.
And she's proud of this shit, by the way. And somehow we've been blinded to the fact that she actually smashed Trump. But I guess when you got no money, anything's possible. Gag orders, Russia. None can stop that, man. He's invincible. I swear, McMahon is booking his presidential run. He, like Roman Reigns, he's the presidential version of Roman Reigns. He can do no wrong.
Yeah, even though he does all the wrong in the world, but yeah.
Let's see. What else happened while we were waiting? Desus and Meryl.
Oh, my God.
So, Desus and Meryl, you know, shout out to the podcast. Good peoples. They obviously are cool with the entire Loud Network fam. Doing their thing in New York. Got the most illustrious show on late night television, if you let them tell it. Everything's going good. They go on a Breakfast Club to promote their little inner city tour joint. And DJ Envy gets real froggy with him before the interview even starts. He's like, yo, you owe me and my wife an apology. That's where shit goes left. Now we see, like, this week-long beef. Erica Mena might be on Desus and Meryl coming up. Envy went on this long apologetic tour, how he smashed Mena, he loves his wife, blah, blah, blah. I'm wondering, we've seen this all play out. What makes a grown-ass man bring up beef maybe from like 6 months ago and request an apology?
His wife. I mean, this one is, Dog, this one is so easy, and so this is the most simple thing. DJ Envy didn't want to do this. He didn't want to confront Deezus Samero on the show. His wife wanted him to confront Deezus Samero on the show. Like, the moment when, who said it, Deezus? When he said, you know, he's there for the check, but he was joking. Like, his wife was essentially been completely disrespected by DJ Envy, by cheating and all the shit that DJ Envy does, which is completely lost on DJ Envy for some reason. The fact that he is the one who created this mess in the first place, but not keeping his dick in his pants and creating an alternate persona outside of the house, is the reason why he was in the position that he was in. So, these are Samero, who have trashed pretty much everybody.
That's their job.
Yeah, like Envy. But here's the funny thing. Like, Envy, you're on the Breakfast Club with Charlamagne. Do you not realize what y'all do every day? So this wasn't a DJ Envy call. This was DJ Envy sitting at home, and his wife was like, you better protect my honor. And he was like, oh, well, baby. And she was like, look, don't come home if you don't do it.
Which means two things. She watches DJ Samero. That's what that means.
It's social media. She heard. A homie could call her and tell her, like, yo.
That wasn't that grimy. Like, they didn't say anything, like, over the top. Like, I thought it was a funny joke.
It's not even over the top. It's a woman. Sorry, women, if you listen to the show, y'all are sensitive to fucking everything. And if somebody talks trash that you can get a hold of, your woman's going to want you. Look. Let me talk about your lady on a show, and she catches wind of it, and then you don't think she's going to tell you? You better check him. I don't care if he's your friend or not. You better check him. And you got to make a decision. And Envy's already in the doghouse. What's he going to say? No?
And this is what it comes down to. As a man who openly talks about my woman on our show, and who, if you guys have been listening long enough, knows I put all my damn business out on this show. When I decide to talk about what I talk about, when I've gone through my shit, when I've pulled the DJ Envy, and I decided to, you know, say, let me speak this into the world. I then give up the right to be mad at anyone for responding however they respond. If someone's, you know, just appalled that I would do some dumb shit, and they tell me, they got the right to say that shit now, because I put my dumb shit out there. And if someone cracks jokes about it, they got the right to do so, because I put my dumb shit out there. Listen, there's a lot of people who had jokes. That shit was mildly funny back then because I was in a bad place. But now I can laugh at it. Like, I feel like Envy's still in that bad place. Where it's like, yo, my man, you got to let that hurt go. Like, you did it. You made it public. Like an idiot if you can't take the backlash. So it makes no sense to attack these guys. And you're not the funny guy on your show. You can't bag on people when you're not the funny guy, because he has no comebacks. He had to walk away.
Just telling you, it's his wife. That was it. His wife said, "Protect my honor. You better check him." And then DJ Envy got macho, you know, and didn't realize like Merrill was like, "Yo, I got my Spanx on now. We can go outside the box." Yo, he probably wasn't expecting that, but that's what you get. So, you know, defend your woman's honor, but at your own peril. Because look, man, if you're gonna be a fool, like, look, I'm not gonna put myself in a position where my wife is going to tell me that, look, you already fucked up, so fix it. Even though we've all kind of been in those spots before where you have to fix something that you did and embarrass your wife or your girlfriend on some level, but if it comes to having to be a national scene where you're on one of the biggest shows and you gotta check somebody who's known to run them on people, like, you're in a bad spot. Like, you were going to lose regardless. So, you know, too bad for DJ Envy. Stay sucker free, buddy, because you got to stay out of that one. He jumped right out of the frying pan into the fire. And he rightfully got cooked. That's what he gets.
And he got to realize, my man, she ain't leave you when you cheated. You're okay. You don't got to just, you know, bent and acquiesce to every whim. She ain't gonna leave you for not confronting DJ Samero.
Listen, shit.
That's not gonna be the last straw. Like, you publicly smashed Erica Mano, but she's gonna leave you because you won't say apologize to DJ Samero?
Bro,
like,
you wanna make nothing, dude, you should know. You talk about your girl anytime. Ain't nothing worse than having a woman that you live with upset with you. Nothing.
Yeah. That's true. He's trying to avoid the wrath.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's nothing more uncomfortable, because you can't win. Like, I don't care. Like, yo, if there's some men that listen to the show that actually win arguments with their woman, she's probably cheating on you. Because you can't win.
Advice by Dre.
I'm just telling you. You don't win arguments with women. You don't. Like, you may think you won, but you didn't really win.
Nah, it's postponed.
It's
to continue again.
I don't have the endurance. Like, I don't have that endurance that my wife has. Like, she's got endurance. Like, if arguing was, like, running the 400, she could run that shit in, like, 20 seconds flat. Me, on the other hand, I'm gassed. After, like, I'll get you in 100, but once we start running that distance,
you hit the turn, and you lose.
I don't have that endurance, man. I can't stay mad that long. At a certain point, I'm like, yo, fuck it. Can we move on? But you can't win arguments with women. And if you do, I'd like to hear how you win an argument with your woman. And I'm not talking about your girlfriend that you went and picked up and you drop her off somewhere. I'm talking about if you live with your woman, you can't win. Whether it's not doing the dishes or whatever the hell it is, you're not winning.
You're not winning. Because even if you feel like you win, it all comes down to who messes up next. And you're going to fuck up next. Yeah, and she's just going to throw it all back at you.
Like, yo, I'm just saying, like, you're just not winning. Envy's not winning. Like, whatever the situation with Envy, if his wife said, yo, check him, and all she did was probably bring up everything from the past. Oh, you can't do this for me, but you can do this with Erica. Like, yo, he didn't want to hear that shit. So he's like, I'd rather confront these two dudes than have to deal with my woman at home. I'm telling you, man. It's crazy.
That is a damn shame. But as we do on this show, when people have beef, we take it to the tail of the tape. So we have DJ Envy, who is listed at 5'10". That might be being generous. No, I don't believe that. Okay, this different site. He is listed at 5'7". They do not have a listed weight. Let's just give him like 180. He is 40 years old. And let's look up the Kid Miro height. We have Miro, who is, there's no height for the Kid Miro. Is this real? He's over 6 foot Dominican. How about that? Who wears Tim's and is known to talk spicy. If we had to put these guys in the hallway or throw some gloves on them, old school status, who do you have winning, Envy or Miro?
Miro.
Yeah, okay, that's not even close, though.
No, I think the crazy Dominican wins every time.
And he's younger. 30, he's only 34. Yep, younger.
Yeah, he's a little younger. He's got a little bit, like, look, man, like, Envy, like, people like my, like, yo, he's washed. Like, Envy, you're not fighting nobody. Like, I'm sure Meryl's been in a fight recently. And I'm saying, like, 6 months. I'm just saying, he's probably been in a fight recently where Envy has been on the top for so long, he kind of forgot what it's like to take crumbs. So, yeah, I'm going with a guy who's probably experienced some rougher times a little bit more recently. I could be wrong. Maybe Envy could throw down, but no.
I don't see that happening. If you had to pick in a no-weight class sanctioned fight, does he even get Desus out of there? Desus was quick to apologize. Desus, you know, he might have a quickness angle, but it's the quiet ones that get you. I don't know if he even gets Desus out of there.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Look, the apology is because he got blindsided. And what else can you do? It's like, that's my homie's homie. So, yo, I didn't know. Sorry. But then it's like, but you really this mad? Because as you watch that Breakfast Club episode, you can kind of see Desus, like, start to sink and get it and start to, you know, it starts to bubble a little bit more because he's thinking, like, this motherfucker really tried to check me on the show. Like, you can see it in his face as the things progress. So, yo, I'm telling you, I think those two probably watched Envy. So, you know, run tell that to DJ Envy. They'll be like, yo, Andrea said you get washed. Yeah, and so, true.
And when we come down to it, yo, Dre, if someone talks crazy about me, like, if I just say, like, I want to do some wild shit, the Cody Rhodes saga. If you better not let me get jumped by Bullet Club, you better got my back. Like, at this point, Charlamagne was sitting there egging it on.
Well, yeah, those are both his boys. So, I mean, there's nothing you can really do but either egg it on and break it up. And Charlamagne's messy, so he's going to egg it on. So, look, if
you can't be letting me get washed in the podcast streets, right?
Nah, man. I mean,
we're going down together. Reverse.
Yeah, I mean, look, we said it in the group chat. Look, I will fight whoever fights you, but if it's your fault, I will fight you after that. So until then, like, we have to fight. We have to get all the people out of there that's coming for you, and then we shall fight for you putting me in that situation in the first place, if it's your fault. Otherwise, of course I got your back.
I feel like that's fair. I feel like, you know, I can't ask for anything more than that. Those are pretty good rules right there. So let's get to the combat sports aspect of things, because there were so many things we could start with, but we're starting with pro wrestling. Mania season, baby. I am officially hyped. I feel like you're a little less ecstatic, but this is the best I felt about a Mania probably in 10 years. Since Shawn Taker rematch, this is the best I felt about a Mania. I didn't expect much from the last New Orleans WrestleMania, and it came through. Shit, you sold your tickets.
Yeah,
so it came through in the end. I have high expectations. Do you think I'm going to be disappointed? I'll be at your crib all day, eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner there. Will we be disappointed? Are you hyped for this Mania?
Man, I mean, just to be completely honest, I would be if it wasn't – like, if this was a show done by any other promotion, like, if you look at this card, the way it's shaping up, I would be excited. But I'm just so concerned because I feel like, yeah, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like, yo, this is a full-time job watching WrestleMania. Fatigue is going to set in at some point. So I hope every match delivers. I just don't feel like – like, I feel like John Cena, Undertaker could be a potential train wreck. But I'm like, this is a good card, and so I have high hope. Like, I hope it's gonna be good, but I'm not coming in there like, yo, it's about to be the best WrestleMania. I'm coming in there like, man, I hope this shit is good, but I'm gonna drink myself into a stupor just in case it sucks.
No faith in Vince. It's like you got your heart broken so much.
Yeah,
it's like, yo, like, not again.
There's just so many times like. I mean, my two favorite WrestleManias that I actually attended was, like, I think it was, like, WrestleMania 21, the one at WrestleMania in Hollywood, which I enjoyed. And it wasn't because of the Batista, Triple H, and John Cena Bradshaw matches. It was just my first WrestleMania, so I was just super excited. And then the one with where Seth Rollins cashed in, which was, like, one of the craziest moments I've ever seen. I never expected that at WrestleMania. That shit just blew my mind when Rollins cashed in. And the crowd was nuts. You had the RKO on Rollins earlier in the night. I mean, that was a great WrestleMania card. The New Orleans card, it surprised all of us. Even though in retrospect, the Undertaker-Brock Lesnar match was shit, and the ending was what was surprising to everybody, but otherwise, like that Daniel Bryan triple threat match is probably one of the best WrestleMania matches ever. When you start to really think about it, that might have been one of the best WrestleMania matches ever.
It was a good match. Like, and I think that's the point where Orton mailed it in.
Nah, you know? Orton's been guilty of mail. Like, Orton's one of these weird guys who, like, I go back to WrestleMania 21 when he wrestled Undertaker and had a phenomenal match. And Orton can have these excellent matches here and there, but it's like something in him just goes into cruise control. Like, Orton, Triple H at WrestleMania 20, whatever the fuck it was, where Orton was just beating up the entire McMahon family, they fucked that up. Like, Orton should have beat Triple H at that Mania because he was on top-level heel mode. Like, he was in fuego heel. But then he lost to Triple H. Like, Triple H has been throwing the shovel at motherfuckers for years. but Orton, he just has this weird gear. Like, the Orton-Seth Rollins match, if you remember when Rollins went to curb stop him and Orton caught him in midair.
Yeah, which was dope.
That was a great Orton match. But then he just kind of mails it in. And you're like, well, what the fuck? So you never know what you get with Orton. So he's been doing this for years. And I don't think anything after that or before that was a precursor to him mailing it in. It's just part of his personality.
That's a damn shame. I felt like he delivered when he was younger, though. Like, pretty consistently.
I mean,
and then
when he won the title against Benoit, that was excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had spots where he's been really good, and then there's times where he just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, I guess that Seth Rollins match was actually pretty good, but he has had less than three really good matches since that Daniel Bryan triple threat. You can't think of it because that's how much he hasn't mattered. We could name three AJ Styles matches right now. He's been in the WWE for 2 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's AJ Styles. He's a different level of competitor. Like,
then AJ Styles, then Randy Orton, who's paid like a top guy. Well, who's supposed to be a top guy.
He's a WWE top guy. It's a big difference. Like, AJ Styles has been a top guy wherever he's gone. Like Randy Orton would not survive on the indie circuit. He would...
You can Cody Rhodes him.
You could.
But I don't know if he even humbles himself to do that.
That's the problem.
Which Cody definitely did. He bought into the culture. You know, he did it the right way. Like, he was like, okay, where do you guys want to script me? He's a part of the Elite. A part of the Bullet Club. He doesn't have to be the guy by himself. I think Orton would want that.
Yeah, like, I just can't see Orton running things in the indie scene. Like, he's a WWE guy. Like, there's certain guys who were built in the WWE, who came out of the WWE factory, and then they can't really do shit else. Like, your boy Ryback. Like, these guys are products of the WWE. Other guys...
Don't
like
you AJ speak Styles, bad about Ryback. He's out of Walmart somewhere here in Vegas signing autographs.
Probably right now. But Styles, on the other hand, from Impact to, I mean, well, TNA and ROH, and then, you know, his rebirth on New Japan. Like, when has AJ Styles been whack in ring? And all he's done since then, since TNA, because he wasn't a great promo, is he's actually become a much better promo.
Yeah.
So it's like, the guy is just, he will go down top 10 ever in ring.
I agree. And he'll probably be underrated.
Yeah, because
it's all said and done. Because it's hard to put him up against the greats who have done it on the WWE stage for that long. And at this point, the New Japan stage for that long. Because where do you rank like guys like Okada or Tanahashi? I mean, like, it's difficult. But AJ, longevity, it's damn near 20 years. He hasn't missed a beat.
Nah, the man has always been, in ring, he has always been good. So I never, like, there's never a time where you've seen AJ, I mean, I'm sure it's happened maybe a couple times, where he's mailed it in. It just doesn't happen. He comes and shows up. I mean, shit, AJ versus Shane shouldn't have been as good as it was. Shouldn't have been last year.
That was the best match last year.
Right, on a card that was pretty fucking long and shitty, but it opened the show. Like, you remember how upset I was. I don't want to see AJ Styles facing Shane, man. I thought it was bullshit.
Yeah.
But he could wrestle a turd and paint it gold. Like, he's that good.
Nah, that's true. Let's talk about someone else who could do the same. The American Dragon is back. Daniel Bryan gets cleared. I may or may not have shed a tear or two during that opening segment. I will keep that to myself. If you guys haven't checked out the WWE YouTube channel, they have a great behind the scenes of right before Daniel Bryan is walking out. It's like the day he finds out that he's cleared, and it's leading up to his entrance. That shit almost brought a tear to my eye. Man, I can't believe it. It's something I thought could happen. I thought they'd have to cut him and he'd go to an indie promotion and they'd let him wrestle. To see him come out last night, deliver the speech, and then close the show and take bumps. And if anyone was like, yo, take care of Daniel, let him ease back into it. No one told that shit to him. Because he went straight to 100%.
Man. Like, first of all, I interviewed Daniel Bryan years ago. When he first, like, when, I think this was before that 13-second loss of Sheamus. Or maybe it was after. I can't remember. And I had WWE interviews, for anybody listening to the show who's never done an interview with a WWE superstar before, are very weird because there's somebody always on the phone with you from WWE PR, and they're monitoring everything that's going on. So you get in this weird space where you don't really know if it's kayfabe or we just talking straight up. And I've interviewed a lot of guys, like Big E. I've interviewed a lot of people, Sasha, Big E, Elias just recently. I'll probably be talking to a few people from Mania. But Daniel Bryan was probably my favorite interview. Because there's this weird thing about him where you can tell he's genuinely enjoying what he does. There are guys that you listen to talk, and you're not really sure if they're just kind of mailing it in because they just have to do it. But, you know, and this is when I was writing for MTV, so maybe it was MTV as well. But he was just really, like, we talked about ROH, we talked about everything, and he was just really excited about wrestling. And I'm like, well, dog, you've been wrestling already for like a decade. But he's like, he loves what he does. If he didn't get paid anything for it, he'd still be wrestling. So the day he retired because of the injury, like, that shit hurt. Because you can see, like, if you think about the things that you love to do, if you ever get the opportunity to do what you love to do and actually get paid for it on the biggest stage of them all after grinding as long as he did, and getting shit on as long as he did, it's very difficult for you to take it away. But to see him get it back, to see him get that opportunity back, and like to know, like, yo, you just had a baby, he's married. Like, there was a time where, you know, it's like, damn, man, you can't walk. And then one day the doctor's like, yo, you can walk, son. Get up out of that fucking wheelchair. Let's go. Daniel Bryan, he just get up. He ran. Like, yeah, he took bumps like a trooper. Mm-hmm. And to get a chance to do this now, because the WWE's changed a lot since he retired. Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, AJ Styles. Like, these are guys that he worked with in, like, Ring of Honor and indie promotions and PWG, where now it's like, yo, the whole world is new. He don't have to wrestle Batista.
It's a whole different landscape now.
Look, just think about it. As long as he stays healthy, because that's always going to be the question. How long can he stay healthy? Kevin Owens, Nakamura, AJ Styles, Finn Balor, like right off the top. Just think about the quality of those matches.
I'm hyped to see him versus Sami Zayn.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yo, Samoa Joe, like, come on, man.
I didn't even think about Samoa Joe.
There's so many things that could... I mean, Seth Rollins. I mean, yo, the last time Daniel Bryan was wrestling, Seth Rollins was still Tyler Black. Like, he was still, you know, he's still in FSW before it was really NXT. Like, he never got a chance to wrestle him.
Nah, he's still part of the Shield. Did we get Team Hell No versus the Shield?
I think
we might have got a match. Yeah, but it was just... But that's still not the same. Yeah, like, it wasn't the Kingslayer, burn him down, whipping the title around, you had Seth Rollins.
It wasn't peak Rollins. It was still like a part of a group Rollins. It's kind of like where Big E is right now in the New Day. Like, if you wrestle Big E now, it's like, well, I'm kind of wrestling the New Day Big E. But if you wrestle Big E by himself, it's probably going to be a next level different Big E. Like, Rollins was still on the come up when Daniel Bryan was in WWE. Those two never got to meet one-on-one and tear the house down. Mm-hmm. Now? Yo. So everything that happened on Tuesday, like, even though it was SmackDown, everything in the middle of SmackDown sucked, but the beginning and end were excellent.
Yeah, Charlotte lost, which was fucking weird.
No, we got to stop. Like, look, man, I'm so sick of you having these title, the champions lose on TV to bums. So stupid.
I mean, Natalya's not a bum. That's grimy.
But they have to tease
the cash-in, right? Because the cash-in's going to fail.
I just don't understand why. Like, the whole thing here is, how about we keep Charlotte as strong as possible because she's about to face a woman who's never lost?
Yeah. I mean, that'd be pretty smart. But they have to have – I mean, what? You have two more shows until Mania?
Yeah.
Carmella has to cash in on one of these shows.
No, she'll probably cash in the day after.
No, she's going to lose to Asuka. You don't want her necessarily cashing in on Asuka.
I mean,
because if she breaks the streak, that's just a whole different level of – wow.
This is WWE's bookings issue. This has been the issue since Survivors, and I want to say probably even since SummerSlam. They move things too quickly, and then they forget, oh, well, we still got like 4 weeks to do this shit. Like, they pulled the trigger on the Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon thing way too early, and they had nothing to do in between, which is why it grew so stale. Fortunately, Daniel Bryan's cleared, and now you have this tag match, which changes the entire match. But, dog, it was boring. Carmella winning Money in the Bank was a dumb decision.
In which because the WWE Women's Special shows her, like, she grabbed the briefcase. No, my man, you can't erase that from my memory. She did not grab the briefcase.
Hey, we don't worry about the unemployed.
A man grabbed that briefcase. They fucked up that match.
Yeah.
Road Dogg got to be at the end of his rope. I know I blame him for everything, but him and Vince, fuck it. They could both go.
But Vince ain't going nowhere, so we just got to deal with it. We got to deal with it. Like the booking for WrestleMania, the matches look great on paper. If you gave somebody who just watched wrestling and be like, boom, here's your matches for Mania. He's like, yo, this looks dope. And then you were like, well, here's the build for all these matches. You'd be like, man, get the fuck out of here. Like, because the build for a majority of these matches has sucked.
Yeah, they haven't been great.
Like, look, let's run down the list. Okay? Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar. Let's start there.
It sucks because they rushed it.
Not even that they rushed it.
Roman Reigns had the IC title for some reason and then lost that shit and then lost in the gauntlet match pretty easily to Seth. And then next thing you know, he just goes Super Roman in a chamber and he's supposed to be worthy of Brock now?
Well, like, they built, like, the day after, was it the day after WrestleMania? When Roman Reigns said, I'm going to face you at WrestleMania, or I'm going to get that title back, whatever the fuck. And people groan because they're like, oh, man, they're already angling towards Brock versus Roman. Mm-hmm. This was a year ago. Like, everything
but so much happened since. Like, Strowman came back strong. Like, you got to build Finn again. It's part of, like, the Bullet Club. Like,
but they never veered off the course. That's the point. They never went off the course with Roman. Like, things changed. Like, they brought the Shield back together to try to get Roman cheers. Then Dean Ambrose got hurt. So then it was like, well, fuck, now what are we going to do? Then they tried the little Jason Jordan thing with Rod. Like, everything fell apart, but they never were like, you know what? We're not putting Roman in the main event. It never changed. So no matter how they had to get there, they were going to get there. And now we're here. And now
four straight main events.
Look. I put that statistic in the group chat. Four straight WrestleMania main events. If he headlines this WrestleMania, which he probably is, four straight WrestleManias for Roman Reigns. A feat that nobody has accomplished except for one individual. Not John Cena, not Steve Austin, not The Rock. Hulk Hogan. That's the only other person who has headlined four straight WrestleManias.
I am my boy HBK. Four straight.
Straight. Come on, man. And again, like, they tried everything. They tried to get the Shield back together. That fell apart. They tried to put him to the mid-card and put the IC title on him. I mean, it was only trying to put a Band-Aid because the Shield fell apart and all this other shit. So now it's like, all right, well, let's try to make Brock Lesnar the ultimate douchebag by not showing up on TV and then beating up Roman Reigns when he's handcuffed. They're trying everything. Fans aren't buying this shit.
Well, actually, I think it's working. He's getting a little bit more cheers than usual. Yeah. But as soon as he wins the belt, it's going to go right back.
I'll tell you what.
Because it's not a sustainable storyline for Reigns.
The point is that when he walks out in New Orleans, they're going to boo the fuck out of him. That's it.
You think?
Oh, absolutely. Dog, you were at WrestleMania in Dallas. And Triple H was like,
the hell out of him. Yeah.
He's like, dude, Undertaker, Triple H, they booed the fuck out of him. He's not escaping the boos. WrestleMania is the one place because now you have so many smart pro wrestling fans who go to WrestleMania weekend and buy the cheap seats for WrestleMania but go to all the other shows. And they're here like, I'm just going to boo Roman Reigns. Like, there's nothing that's going to take me off of this.
I think he'll get cheered entering the ring, booed after he wins the belt.
Yeah, okay. Well, remember this, and we'll bring this back up after Mania. Roman's getting booed out of the building. Unless Brock Lesnar was going back to the UFC, just like WrestleMania 20, unless that were to happen, was it 20? Whatever the fuck WrestleMania was. Might have been 20.
Him and Goldberg, right? That was a shit show of a match, though.
Unless that happens, there's no way Roman's getting cheered on his way. He's going to get booed.
Let's see. Styles, Nakamura, they didn't start building early enough. Styles was caught up in that Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens angle. And then now it looks like Styles is a little banged up and injured. So they really can't even do too much in the ring to build it. So they're kind of handcuffed. That just got to come off great in ring.
Yeah, I mean, again, an unnecessary pay-per-view. I've talked about this before. When you plug in that unnecessary pay-per-view before WrestleMania, you have to create feuds that don't really matter. They're like arbitrary feuds. And that six-man match was completely arbitrary. Didn't have to happen.
No, and but the Nakamura versus Rusev match, I think, has woken Nakamura up. I've enjoyed both of his matches with Rusev a lot.
I mean, that's cool. But I'm just saying, in terms of build, it's like, why aren't we working on Styles? Like, Styles Nakamura, not that it should be the equivalent of, but it should be very similar to the build that we got with Stone Cold and The Rock. In the sense of two baby faces, you know, one feels like he needs to remain champion, the other feels like he needs to get that title. Mm-hmm. And they tease each other for weeks. Like, Stone Cold and The Rock's feud before WrestleMania 17 was electric because it carried on from the day that Austin won the Royal Rumble. And then The Rock beat Angle at No Way Out. And then for the next several weeks, they got kind of tease finishers on each other. And the people got in the way, like Kurt Angle got in the way and got beat up.
Yeah. That's what made the promo so incredible.
Yeah. But the way the build was is that there was energy because you knew that these two were going to have a showdown. But they kind of touched each other. Like, there was a finisher here and they were stealing each other's finishers. Like, that was, like, the perfect build. And that's what should have been similar with, you know, Styles and Nakamura. The best thing that happened was, you know, Nakamura rolling up on Styles. And Styles was like, I know you're going to beat me. And Nakamura was like, you should have more confidence. Like, that was, like, the best little interaction that they had between the two.
Well, Nakamura has actually been pretty good on the mic lately.
Yeah, because he's charismatic. The man is, the charisma is out of this world, but they should have been building this. Like, that Fastlane match was completely pointless.
Yeah, I agree. They waited too long. They rested on the fact that people know the New Japan history and are waiting this match and said, we don't have to build this match. They said it's ready-made. We don't have to pay attention to it, which is the wrong way to go about it.
Where does it land on the WrestleMania card?
First or middle? Directly in the middle or first up?
It's got to be early. I mean, you got to feel like it's got to be early because there's so much on there that's not going to be as good in terms of the quality.
But if they come out first, they're shutting that shit down.
I don't think they'll do it first. I mean, they could, potentially.
But no, I wouldn't mind them. Fuck. I wouldn't mind them second to last. If we get Daniel Bryan coming out first, that's perfect. Because the pop is going to be insane, right? So you give us the tag match first. I wouldn't mind the show closing with Styles Nakamura. And then we get Bliss Jax. And then Lesnar Reigns. I like that close. Because they do the roller coaster shit. I mean, if I was booking it like a New Japan show, it would be completely different, you know? But I like that close as far as their roller coaster booking is concerned. And right before them, I would put Cena Taker.
Yes. Yeah, well, here's the other issue. And this is what we'll figure out. Where is the Ronda Rousey match going to go?
Fuck,
To be honest with you, that could potentially close WrestleMania.
It could. Or it could be first.
It won't be first.
Trips loves coming out first.
No, he doesn't.
Trips Sting was early.
Yeah, but he didn't come out first.
What was that, second?
No.
We had a ladder match. We had a ladder match in Trips Sting.
It was the ladder match. You had the tag match, the ladder match. You had Orton, Rollins. That shit was like right in the middle of the show when the sun was still out. But it was in the middle of the show. Triple H is not. That match will not happen first.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know where you put that match. That could close, but you're not going to rob. You're not going to rob Roman of the four straight. So
that's what I'm saying. That's what I think. It's crazy. Like, the booking for Mania is going to be interesting because I'm trying to figure out where some of these matches are going to go. But anyway,
Taker. I mean, Taker has to come out later. So Taker Cena is going to feel like a big deal, even though the build is weird.
Yeah, the build is weird. He's going to come out late. It was so weird when Undertaker and Bray Wyatt had their match and the sun was still out. And it was like, man, what are y'all doing?
It robbed them of some great entrances, too, because that shit looked dope. But it would have looked so much better at night.
But this would be a dome, so they'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, talking about Bray Wyatt, Ultimate Deletion. Let's hop off real quick.
God.
I didn't think it was great. I didn't mind it, though.
That shit sucks.
I thought it was too short. They didn't give him the time he had in TNA. But outside of that, I thought, you know, the magic was there. The funniness, the corniness was there in aspects. I laughed several times. And I thought they did what no one really expected for them to do, and that's to build a long-term storyline into the Ultimate Deletion, where, especially at the end, where Bray Wyatt gets tripped out, he's about to win, and then Senior Benjamin starts, you know, hands him the globe. He's got the whole world in his hands. Brother Nero pops up. And then Matt wins and then push him to the Lake of Reincarnation, in which I think we get old Riverboat Bray Wyatt back. I think we get the whole world in his hands style Bray Wyatt. And I think he comes back out in the little battle royal and shit. Like, I think we get that reset button. No more Eater Worlds. No more we're trying to make you Sister Abigail, Halloween-ish, the new Undertaker. No. We're going to take you back to what the fuck worked as a character, and let's see if we can hit this reset button.
No, I hated it. Look, you could try
to... What did you expect?
I expected shit, so I got shit. I got what I expected, which is trash. Like, it's not like I opened the lid on the trash can and was like, oh, shit, a birthday cake. No, it was bad. I got shit. Because it was... They had to try and duplicate what happened in TNA, but try to make it original with, like, different production value. And Bray Wyatt just really wasn't the guy to – like, and not saying that Bray Wyatt couldn't be that guy, but the kookiness of Total Deletion, the reason why it worked in TNA is because nobody knew what to expect.
Yeah.
Like, we had no idea what we were seeing in this match. Because that was a match that was like, it happened, and then people were calling each other like, yo, are you watching this shit? Like,
what the fuck did I just watch?
Exactly. So with this, you kind of knew what you were getting into. So the fact that you knew it took the novelty away from it immediately, and then you just kind of had, you know, some dumb shit. So it was like, and Bray Wyatt, like, the feud hadn't reached that point where I felt like, oh, we need total deletion. It felt like they were in a place where, again, WrestleMania is overbooked. We got a lot of feuds going on. And what I said from the beginning, Matt Hardy's like a mid-card guy. So we're just going to kind of put it in at the end of a random-ass Raw.
Yeah, I thought it would be great on the WrestleMania pre-show, yo. I thought that's where it should have fit.
That's how I felt like it should have fit there, too. But it's like you got to serve so many stories and so many characters. Matt Hardy's not a guy who's upper mid-card. He's like smack in the mid-card. Like, he's Andre the Giant Battle Royal guy. So Total Deletion suffered because of it. TNA, on the other hand, was the main event.
Yeah. And they gave him time every week. I feel like they split the show exactly in half every week. Here's our normal shit. Here's Matt's time. Yeah, he doesn't get that now. We'll see if, you know, Brother Nero comes back and they can work the tag team angle. I felt weird about the second one, the tag team one in TNA. I didn't like it as much either. But that shock value was gone. But I do think it has a place. I think that it's funny. It was lighthearted. People who aren't like us, who didn't watch the first ones, are like, yo, what the fuck was this?
I mean, they probably thought it was trash, though.
But we thought the first one was trash. Until, like, we sunk in, like, and 2 days later, we're like, wait, we gotta watch it again. And then we watched it again, and we were like, yo, that shit was dope. Like, it was kind of crazy.
It was just a whole, like, that, the first one was like a what the fuck. Like, this wasn't a what the fuck. This was like, come on. Like,
For us, it wasn't. But for people who had no clue, it was.
I need to find somebody who didn't see the first one and watch this and was like, man, that was pretty good. Or that was interesting.
No, they're
like,
supposed to say, that was the worst shit I've ever seen. And then they're not gonna come back and say, was that the worst shit I've ever seen?
Like, and they're going to say yes, because the reason why is because we already saw the House of Horrors match. Like, dog, we're a year removed from Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania with that shitty match with Randy Orton. Yeah. And they tried to duplicate it by having the New Day versus the Wyatt family, by trying to do something similar in that swamp bullshit. Like, the WWE is notorious for making shit cheesy. And this was cheesy. And it wasn't cheesy good, because TNA, you have the bars low. So when the bar is low and shit happens, you're just like, oh, all right, cool.
Yeah.
WWE, you watch some shit, you're like, 10 minutes of what? What the fuck was this?
Yeah, it was too short. I needed more story. Like, I needed more Vanguard 1. Like, you know, I needed them to tell a full story. But once again, I thought they'd get that on Mania. And for some reason, they rushed it and put that shit on Raw. So, yeah. I don't know. It felt weird and out of place there. Yeah, man, that's wrestling, though. We have, I know you don't watch 205 Live, but I was shocked. Cedric Alexander is taking on Mustafa Ali for the title.
Yeah, at WrestleMania. I didn't watch the match, but what the fuck?
That was a good good match, man. If you have time, in which we barely have time, but while you're writing something, throw on the tournament for the past 4 weeks. There was some good matches. Really good matches on there.
Like, being out of town, I didn't get to, like, I've completely avoided spoilers for New Japan World Cup, so I'm watching that shit for, like, the next 2 days, and then I'll probably watch 205.
I watched, like, a good amount of it at work today, and it was dope. It's not bad. You're going to enjoy it. Mustafa Ali was, to me, I thought he was going to lose every round, and he was just showing out. They made good promo packages for him and everything, and then, I thought he was destined to lose last night. He comes through and wins, so two faces to see who becomes champion. They're going to put on a good match. I just don't know story arc-wise where it goes. Because when you put two faces in, I'm expecting a heel to return and really wreck shit, you know? And it's making me wonder, like, yo, does Neville make that appearance? Like, after, does you know, Cedric win and Neville comes out and just wrecks him? And we get heel Neville again.
I don't think so, but... We'll see.
We'll get like a heel Neville. We'll get like a Bruiserweight. I know you don't want people to move up necessarily, but I think we might get a Pete Dunne coming in, just wrecking Sop and shit. Like, they didn't go with a heel for a reason, and I'm wondering why. That's Mania. We'll see how Ronda does. If you guys have time, make sure you guys check out WWE YouTube page and see Ronda's back or I guess it was a dark match segment and promo. That shit was horrible with Dana Brooke.
Yeah, it was awkward. It was like
it sent me back 10 paces. I was so ready. Like, Ronda's gonna be great in ring. I saw that. I was like, rewind.
Yo, the karate chop and the karate block was like terrible.
That it was so corny. Bad. You want to see corny? That shit was corny.
Yo, one thing before we move on that we didn't get to talk about was how good the ROH show was.
Oh,
we didn't get to talk about
very
that.
Good, right?
I mean,
which I had low expectations.
Don't we? It seems like we always do at this point. Like, we look at the ROH card and we go, it's the exact opposite of WWE. WWE puts all this work into these storylines and then the payoff sucks. Whereas ROH is like, oh, we're getting, social, what do they call it? Social Experiment versus the Hung Bucks.
Yep.
You're like, all right, this should be a decent match. And then it happens. You're like, holy shit. They tore the house down. Yeah. Like, Jay Lethal versus Dalton Castle was excellent.
Great match.
Like, but who expected it? Because we were all like, dude, Jay Lethal, really? Like, what did he do to get a title shot?
Yeah, because it had no build, but the chemistry in the match was good.
Yeah, like even the Martin Skrull Punishment Martinez match, I expected nothing out of that
Fortunately,
match.
I missed that match.
What do you mean you missed it?
I missed it. I showed up right at the end of it.
Yo, that match was a good-ass match.
So I've heard. Because like, it was the two women's matches, and then that was the first match.
No, Flip Gordon versus Takahashi was the first match.
Okay.
Then that was.
Yeah.
And the Flip Gordon Takahashi match was kind of eh. Flip Gordon, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But,
unfortunately, I missed the villain. But to see him get the next title shot is pretty dope.
Well, I mean, dude, it makes Super Card of Honor, like we'll talk about it when Mania Weekend comes up, but Super Card of Honor is shaping up to be fucking great. Really great. And then we got the Long Beach show next week.
Yeah, and I'm not ditching NXT to see Super Card of Honor, though. I know many people have. I couldn't do it.
I mean, listen.
For Gargano Ciampa alone, I'm not missing it.
I mean, that, I don't know, man. Cody, like the Cody Kenny Omega match, and then you got Dalton Castle. Ugh. I mean, NXT should be a great show. We all know this.
Yeah.
But that Supercard of Honor show is about to be something else.
You want to talk about our Saturday? There's Supercard of Honor, NXT, okay. UFC 223, and boxing. Because we'll be at the Lara fight that Saturday. That's our Saturday night.
Oh, my God. Yeah, WrestleMania weekend's crazy. Like, for combat sports writers, like if you cover just MMA, fine. You got UFC 223, you're good. If you cover just boxing, you got the Jared Hurd Arizona Lara fight with J-Rock on the other card. Fine. You're in good shape.
You cover pro wrestling. That's a good-ass card, by the way. They sent me the card. I was like, ooh, yeah, let me apply for these credentials. Fuck.
Yeah.
They got me.
You're a pro wrestling guy? If you're a WWE guy, of course. You got NXT. If you're an indie guy, you got Supercard of Honor. But if you love all these things like I do, then you're fucked.
Yeah.
Because now you have all these things happening at the same exact time. Now, I have Fight Pass, so I will be watching UFC ringside during the Lara Hurd fight. Because I can't – there's no way I can not watch that UFC card. Because I'm not going to want to watch it when I go home. Because I have to watch NXT and Supercard on it. Because I think – so basically in a nutshell is what I'm saying is if you tweet at me on that Saturday about anything that's going on, I'm not listening. I'm muting everything.
I owe anyone the fade who tries to spoil everything for me. I am not watching NXT until I go over Dre's crib on Sunday at like 9 a.m. and my flip-flops and my pajama pants. So do not say shit to me between 9 p.m. and 9 a.m. Thank you in advance, Corner Club. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear nothing. I don't want to hear Ring of Honor shit. I got to sneak that in somewhere.
Right.
I don't even know how we're going to do it. Thank God Dre has like 18 million TVs.
I've got a lot of TVs.
So like I have two. If we have to have NXT on the same time as Ring of Honor, we might have to do that.
Yeah, I got a big screen. Like I got two big screens that are less than like 10 feet apart. Don't ask me why. Because it's just the way my house is set up. So I have my 70 inch where the main thing will be on. And I have split screen too on my Xbox and on my regular television. And then I have my other one where I pull feeds from. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of shit going on.
Yeah, that's going to be a crazy day. Let's talk about boxing then. Boxing and UFC has kind of been low-key. It's been very wrestling-heavy lately. But in boxing, Canelo Alvarez, he got to stay off the meat, my man. pause. But that's really what it comes down to. Like, tested positive. They swept it under the rug. So it's that bad Mexican meat again. You know, nothing to see here. No headlines. Everything's still good. Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, let's go Canelo. And Triple G's like, hold on. Nah, like, we gonna talk about this shit. And he went on a crazy rant today. I read Kevin Ioli's piece on how, you know, the rant might come back to bite Triple G. And it was well written. I understand the premise. I don't disagree with Kevin necessarily, but I'm just finding it hard to understand how stuff will come back to bite Triple G in the ass when he's the one who didn't test positive. Like, nothing bit Canelo in the ass for testing positive. So why would a rant about that come back to bite Triple G? I'm lost. So yeah, I don't understand that whole dynamic.
I don't know. And I mean, listen. Look, when you look at Canelo's body, you look how big he was, you look how big he is, and then you look at him.
Small now, though.
Yeah, he's a lot smaller. That doesn't mean he's not going to be big on May 5th. But, yeah, like, if I'm Triple G, I'm like, yo, what the fuck? Like, in the UFC, it's so different. Because the moment that he tested positive, you're out of there. and you got to deal with the commission or whatever. Like, they're going to pull him. Boxing was just like, well, yeah, well, let's keep it going. Like, let's keep this party going on. Like, they, whatever Canelo took, yes, I get it. Like, it's a tainted meat. It happens frequently in Mexico. But that means that's why your ass shouldn't be training in Mexico. Like, if there is danger of you testing positive for a banned substance because of the food you eat or the water that you drink where you're at, you've got enough money where you can take that fucking camp somewhere else, especially if it's the biggest fight of your life. Like, you know who wouldn't take this shit? Floyd Mayweather.
At all. It would have been a wrap. Or Floyd would have just gouged his pockets.
Yeah. If Floyd...
Triple G. I don't understand how there was literally no repercussions for it. No renegotiating.
Nothing.
Like, there was no like, okay, my man, you actually tested positive. Like, for me to take this fight, we need to go 50-50. Like, we need to do something. Or I'm walking.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Because now there's an asterisk. What if he goes out there and knocks out Triple G, which many people think could happen? You thought he was going to go out there and beat Triple G. And it would be a different fight. It's an asterisk on all that shit now.
Yeah, so we really don't know. And if Canelo's a dirty fighter, oh, boy. Oh, boy. But
I mean, listen. But it's boxing. So who knows, right? I mean, Oscar spin that shit to oblivion. And we'll see Canelo right back September 13th. But if Canelo's a dirty fighter, and this makes him become a clean fighter for any period of time, that's the real trouble.
Yeah, well, then we get to see what Canelo's like if he's a clean fighter.
And then the confidence is gone. So now does he take Triple G's punches? And that's always the biggest thing. Like, okay, you cheat the system to get to where you are. What happens the day where you get kind of caught and you have to stop cheating? And then it's like, oh, shit, this is not the point for him to do that. Because you got, honestly, his next couple fights are, I mean, maybe an easy fight, maybe, in there. But you have Triple G, J-Rock. If J-Rock goes up, you have the Charlo.
Well, J-Rock ain't shit. Let's not talk about Julian Williams.
No, but that might, J-Rock might be the easy fight.
Yeah, but he won't get the title.
If he moves up, he'd be a guy to beat up on. But we have Jacobs.
That's a guy who Canelo, I believe, will absolutely avoid.
Well, Jacobs was big as hell when he fought Triple G.
Exactly.
He'd be a monster over Canelo. But you think he wants to take Charlo instead?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
he has no gimmies at this point.
If Canelo wins, and you know, we're just kind of shooting the breeze here. Canelo, look, this is no detriment to Canelo, the individual. Because I've said it before, I truly believe Canelo wants to fight everybody.
Yeah, he's a nice guy, too. But, I mean, you know.
But Oscar? Oh, no. Oscar looks at that shit like, we got to bleed this out. So, if Canelo were to beat Triple G, which, for the record, I don't think will happen on May 5th. But if Canelo were to win, and he fights September 13th, it'll be a fluff fight. It's not going to be a Charlo. It's not going to be a top-ranked middleweight. It's going to be somebody that you can beat up on.
So, it'd be a catchweight with, like, a J-Rock.
Yeah, I don't even I gotta see. I'm not even sure who it'll be, but it won't be a tough fight. It won't be. After fighting Triple G, Oscar De La Hoya will say, he's just been in a tough fight, and we have to give him, you know, get him back in shape. Kind of like what Keith Thurman is doing right now. It'll be an easy fight.
Keith Thurman is ducking right now. That's the difference. Keith Thurman had one tough fight and said, you know what? Nah, not for me. Nah.
Yeah.
And that was against, you know, Porter. And yeah. So he looks at these other guys. He's like, nah. What, Crawford? No. Spence? Nah. He's like, yo, what's Danny doing again? That's the point where he's at right now. So it's interesting. It's interesting to see how this affects Triple G, because it seems like he's emotionally built up for this now. Which I don't like too much. I don't know. I mean, it could lead to him just knocking Canelo the hell out early. Or it could lead to him gassing and putting way too much and being too emotionally involved and him gassing and Canelo wearing his ass out later in the rounds.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see, man. But, it, you know, that's like the big story in boxing aside from, you know, who?
Mayweather to the UFC, baby. That's the number one story. Don't avoid it. Say it, Dre. Say it. Speak it into existence. What you did with the first one. And then this little stuff keeps coming out. Keeps coming out. Keeps coming out. The guy is retired. He ain't doing shit else. It doesn't affect his perfect boxing record. It's like going to the WWE. No, it's like not doing anything else. Why not try it? Not saying that I think this shit's going to happen, because I think it's ludicrous. But when you're retired, you got nothing else to do. You obviously are still physically capable of doing something. There's UFC champions pushing 40. Look at Daniel Cormier. You don't have to take a top flight guy. Just go in and fight. Why? It could happen. You ain't got shit else to do. And they're going to pay you a decent amount of money.
Look, Floyd Mayweather's been boxing professional for over 20 years.
Correct.
Prior to that, he was, you know, he fought at Golden Gloves, amateurs, all that shit, Olympics. You think this man really wants to fight? Like, the only reason
Floyd Mayweather... He spent his entire career actively trying not to get hit, which is not an option in MMA.
Therein lies the problem. Like, Floyd Mayweather's entire career has been built upon not getting touched. If you fight in MMA, you're going to get touched.
Yeah.
Because that's just pretty much what it is. More importantly, at 41 years old, I don't care how bored you think Floyd Mayweather is, he's having more fun trolling the shit out of everybody. And, I mean, I'm sure there's something, there's probably a breaking point somewhere in Floyd Mayweather's head right now. It's like, I'll never do this shit. I'll never do this shit. I'll never do this shit. Oh, $500 million? Okay, maybe I'll do this shit.
But they're not putting up that dough.
That's the problem. Like, Floyd Mayweather's not doing an MMA fight for $150 million. And I mean, that'll break the bank, because nobody's making that kind of money in the UFC. And you know
what? The UFC would have to fold, because Conor wouldn't come back after that for less than 80.
Well, here's what's going to be my next thing. If Floyd Mayweather were to compete in the UFC for $150 million or $100 million, do you think there's another fighter who's going to say, I'm going to take 100 and 100 payday?
No, I don't know. Like, you think the champion's taking 500 and paying 500,000 pay-per-view points? You just gave Mayweather 100 million. He never had a fight? Fuck out of here. You break the whole mold. The company collapses.
You're absolutely ruining what you built with the UFC. Like, not like you haven't done it already by paying Conor what you've done and not figuring out, like, oh, shit, everybody's on to us now. There's no secret. Like, Conor, you found out what Conor's getting paid. Conor's not fighting because he's in no hurry to fight because he's rich. But if you put a guy who's never had an MMA fight and you pay him more money than your output for the entire year, I can almost guarantee you without doing the math, just making this up in my head, $150 million is more than every fighter combined outside of Conor McGregor in a 12-month period.
I damn near think you could throw Conor in there.
You might. You might.
And it still eclipse it. $150 million is next level. The only way you can pull it off, which sounds weird and it's never been done by the UFC, I don't believe, is to treat it like boxing and co-promote it, in which then you can say, honestly, Floyd Mayweather is paying himself. We are not paying Floyd Mayweather. It's a really weird loophole, but he can pay himself 100 fucking mil. we have to use this 100 mil to pay the roster. We have all these fees and blah, blah, blah. He's only paying himself. And that's how you do it.
It's ultimately, to me, it's stupid. Yes, I thought Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor was stupid. It was stupid. Like, let's not get this confused. There was that fight shouldn't have happened. But it happened because the public demanded it. And it was Floyd Mayweather's safe zone. And Conor McGregor was daring to be great. It's completely different on if you turn the tables around here. Floyd Mayweather's not daring to be great. He's already great. He's not in a position where he's trying to prove himself. What has he got to prove? He's rich. The only thing he can do here is lose.
Make $100 million, which might push him into the billion-dollar range.
Hypothetically speaking, if Floyd Mayweather were to compete in an MMA fight and win, then what?
They got to walk away. Because you can't poke the bear too many times, right? Like,
I just don't really see the purpose in it. Because it's like, all right.
If you give him a lesser fighter with a stand-up game and no real true wrestling game, which everyone's well-rounded, but don't give him like a college champion or Olympian or some shit. And you hope that Floyd learns how to sprawl and brawl. Take this shit back to like 05.
Dude.
Sprawl and brawl, my man.
One other point I'm going to make. Floyd Mayweather weighs 145 pounds. He might fight as a lightweight at 155 pounds.
That's too heavy.
Then he fights at 145 pounds as a featherweight. He has chicken legs. Floyd Mayweather's legs are so small. The first leg kick he takes is a 42-year-old man, because he's not fighting this year. Not happening. 42-year-old man taking his first leg kick, it'll kill him. He will die of a heart attack.
Well, I'm assuming he'd have to train for this, Dre.
You could train as much as you want. And this is what my other thing is. You could train MMA for the next 12 months, nothing but MMA. Just like Conor did with boxing, even though Conor has trained with boxing before. But that old shit is going to come out of you. Those old habits, like Conor's old habits, came out in the Mayweather fight. But it's different in an MMA fight, because what old habits can Mayweather resort to, except for understanding that shoulder roll and you know check hooks, that shit don't work in MMA. The first time you get leg kick, you think Floyd Mayweather's going to think, I need to check that leg kick? It's not reflex, is my point.
He's going to try to grab and realize, that shit does nothing here.
Yeah, like sprawling. There's no reflex for Floyd to sprawl. You can't really instill that into a guy who's boxed is literally since he was a child. You can't teach him like, yo, somebody shoots with a W, sprawl. He has to think about doing these things. And in MMA, when you think, you get fucked up. It has to be natural. And nothing about MMA is natural to a guy who's boxed.
All right, let's see. Who can we give him? I'm currently at number 25 in the featherweight rankings and still don't see someone he can beat.
There's nobody that Floyd – like Floyd could catch – again, Floyd doesn't punch hard. This is the other thing we have. Floyd doesn't punch hard. He can't out-condition you in an MMA fight.
And Gray Maynard is ranked 26th. I don't think
Gray Maynard probably would fuck him up because Gray Maynard is a wrestler.
Yeah. Artem Lobov.
Artem. Wrestles. There's really
– We're at 30 now with Artem.
And then the other part about this is once you get to these lower-ranked no-name opponents, ooh, are you really making your money back?
Probably not. Alex Caceres.
He probably kicked Floyd Mayweather with his face off.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
It's just the point. The point is, there's just no reason for him to do this. There's a reason for him to troll because it keeps his name in the headlines. There's nothing Floyd Mayweather likes more than to troll everybody. He stays in the mix. Like, even when he's gone, he's never really gone. The fact that Floyd Mayweather, like, that's his legacy. And he'll do this for the next probably 5 years. He'll troll people. Until, like, somebody gives him an offer he can't refuse. And it's really hard to give Floyd Mayweather an offer he can't refuse. The Conor McGregor fight...
In this sport, yes. In boxing, not so much. In this sport, correct.
Yeah, but it's just like, how do you create something that's going to make him more than he made in the Conor and Manny Pacquiao fights?
You don't. The only way to do it is to have him in there against Conor. That's, honestly, that's the only way to recoup your money.
Yeah, and then, even on top of that, like, Floyd fights in the safe zone. Floyd is not a man who takes risks. There's a I've always said from day one that Floyd Mayweather was going to be Manny Pacquiao. I didn't care when it happened. I just knew Floyd was a better fighter. However, to not think that Floyd strategically waited to face Manny Pacquiao would be foolish and naive. Floyd Mayweather picks his opponents at the right time. So for him to not play it safe and to take a risk, like, dog, when's the last time Floyd Mayweather took a risk? Oscar De La Hoya, and that wasn't even a real risk.
Nah, it was well timed. I mean, to be fair, he prepared a long time for that fight.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, Floyd doesn't take risks.
No, like, that was a calculated risk. Like, he knew he was leaving. He had to build up a new persona. He had everything ready for that fight to make that jump, you know?
Yeah, so it's like everybody else, like, the Manny Pacquiao fight was on Floyd's terms. Shane Mosley was on Floyd's terms. Everybody that Floyd has fought has been on his terms. There's not – even Canelo was like, oh, he's young. I'll take him now. I'm not going to wait for him to get better. I'm going to take him out now. Surprised a lot of people, but Floyd knew what he was doing. Drain him, bring him to my level, beat him. Floyd's not going to go to a place where he's not familiar and take a risk for anything less than double his biggest paycheck.
Yeah. Now, it'd have to be something crazy. But if Floyd trained for 6 to 8 months, it is a pretty good, easy way to determine if he should fight. You bring Kevin Lee in, who's a trainer, Dewey. Cooper is always at the Mayweather gym. You say, hey, Dewey, bring in Kevin Lee. He fights at 155, you know, 170 probably might move up to there. But 155 guy, bring him in. Bring him in. Let's see what's popping with him. If I can not get killed, I can take a fight. Now, if Kevin rolls his ass into a pretzel and kicks him to oblivion in a training session, then he walks away. No harm, no foul. It's pretty good litmus test.
Yeah, I don't see it. I just don't see Floyd doing this.
We don't see any of the stupid shit. But like you said, if the money is there, Floyd might do it. The UFC will be completely in shambles, though. Because you can't pay anyone else after that. Talking about the UFC, CM Punk looked like he's gearing up for another fight. If CM Punk can fight, Mayweather can fight. CM Punk had no skills. Mayweather at least has one very elite skill. What skills?
I'm just saying.
He rolled around and did some jujitsu shit that I can do in the gym. I go pay right now. Right now, I pay $30 a month. I go to Extreme Couture fucking syndicate MMA gyms out here, and I'll learn as much jujitsu as CM Punk.
But that's my point. Like, if that doesn't emphasize it more than anything else, CM Punk trained for well over a year and got ran over by Mickey Gall. Ran over.
In a minute.
By a guy that nobody knew who came off of a YouTube show. So, and CM Punk is getting played a lot less than Floyd Mayweather. So, to try to...
like, he's getting paid a lot more than the majority of the roster, though.
Yeah, he's getting paid a lot, but I'm just saying, Floyd Mayweather's asking price versus CM Punk's asking price? Big difference. And CM Punk he's trying to be great. Floyd's not trying to be great. He's trying to be rich. It's a big difference. Like CM Punk is legitimately trying to be good at MMA.
I highly doubt. Seeing Floyd's work ethic, and when Floyd goes in and goes into training, hey, you can't lose that. You can't. He wouldn't go into a fight regardless. He wouldn't go into a fucking thumb wrestling match and not put 100% on it, especially no, pay-per-view one. I think he'd go in daring to be great.
No, I don't. And I don't think he
wouldn't do it just for the, like, when the shit came down to it, he'd take the fight for the check. The training and the fight itself, nah, he's doing that shit's way. He knows no other way.
Well, I mean, of course, but it's different. It's like Floyd Mayweather training. Like, if Floyd Mayweather wanted to play in the NBA, yeah, he's going to train really hard, but he's not making it in the NBA.
Well, it's like Jordan going to MLB, right? He tried really hard. Maybe he failed, but he thought he was going to win. He didn't go there for the paycheck.
But that's Floyd's going for the paycheck.
Once the lights are on, I think he goes to compete. The check handles itself.
Yeah, no. That's what you're missing my point. Floyd does. He fights for the paycheck for the lowest risk possible. He doesn't come to fight to prove that he's better than everybody else. His career has never been built like he does. He's undefeated, so he can say he's better than everybody else. But he doesn't fight to say, "Oh, I beat the toughest guys out there."
He better go into an MMA fight looking to knock someone's fucking head off.
I'm just saying, like...
He can't be defensive.
But he would, but my point is that Floyd doesn't take risks. Taking an MMA fight is a risk.
Yes.
That's it. That's my whole point.
His style would have to change to then be risky.
His muscle reflexes at 42 years old will not allow him to change.
You don't think?
Hell no.
I think it'd have to be the complete opposite of his boxing career. Boxing career was safe. His fighting style was safe. Collect the check. This is collect the check. I have to take a risk by taking this fight. I got to take a risk in this fight. I gotta walk forward, bury my head in someone's chest, and knock them the fuck out. Yeah, they not take happening. Me down and tap me. Cool, I didn't get knocked out.
He's not, dog. He's not doing it. Like, let's just get past. Let's get past all the bullshit.
No, he's not doing it.
He's not. He's not taking a risk. He's not putting his legacy on the line. Like, there's nothing more than everybody would want to see than Floyd Mayweather laying there getting his head kicked off or getting choked out and tapping out. Floyd Mayweather, his whole life is built on I don't lose. He's not trying to compete in something that he could possibly lose.
Yeah, most likely lose. All right, before we get out of here, real quick, we had a UFC card last weekend. UFC London, it was on Fight Pass. Not too many people saw it. Why? Because it was on Fight Pass. But the main card, to me, was kind of a dud. I went back and watched some of the main card fights. But we can talk about it right now. We have Tom Dukinwah. I said it right? Yeah. Yeah. Where's Ryan McKinnell to correct me on that? Yeah, no, he did a good job, bounce back fight. To me, the hype is kind of dying down a bit on the Fire Kid. Maybe because there's newer, like, foreign guys that have taken over the hype train. But it was a solid fight. He needed it. It's just they can't push him to the moon like we originally thought. Then we had Jan Błachowicz versus Jimmy Manuwa. And Błachowicz beat Manuwa, so now light heavyweight looks shitty as always.
Yeah, I mean, it's light heavyweight. And Manuwa, who I picked to win that fight, I thought he beat him. But Błachowicz got a hard head. Błachowicz rocked him a few times, too. So, yo, light heavyweights, dude, they just booked Shogun versus Odesmir. They just booked that fight. And you look at it and you're like, really? But
I mean, yeah.
That's light heavyweight. There's really nowhere else to go.
Volkan needs names. And Gus, listen, Gus Rockhold for the interim belt wouldn't bother me.
Rockhold for interim title.
Fuck it. He just got ransacked. So what? You acting like interim titles mean anything? Like, you know, you give him the chance to luck up and become interim champion. And then you put DC in a very awkward situation, but at least it's a talking point. Or you let, you know, Alex do what Alex does and finally touch some gold.
It's dumb. It's really stupid, but hey, UFC is really stupid.
Yeah, listen, this is what happens when you have three champions versus champion fights potentially in one weekend. And then we had Alexander Volkov versus Fabricio Werdum. Fabricio is out of here. It's official. It's time to hang him up. He's almost Fabricio Bellator. It is. Like, He can't do it. He's the gatekeeper.
Dog, he was just a top contender. He lost to Alexander Volkov.
Stipe beat Travis. Ream, Walt Harris, that shit was on 2 minutes notice. Got a decision versus Tybura, which, okay, Marcin Tybura, and then gets KO'd again by Volkov.
It's not time to hang it up. You're crazy for saying this. He lost to Alexander Volkov.
He won't be a title contender again. He's a gatekeeper.
Everybody's a gatekeeper then. Because heavyweight is so thin, he could win one or two fights and be right back in the title picture.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be tough. Because you feed him to a Derek Lewis. You feed him.
Feed him to Derek Lewis? He takes Derek Lewis down. He probably chokes him out.
Okay, or he gets his fucking face knocked off. Like, but that's every fight. But I'm saying, like, I put more money on him getting his face knocked off.
That's crazy. Like, yo, he lost to Alexander Volkov, who I think he really took him lightly. Watching that fight, I think that
for four rounds he took him lightly?
No. Here's what happened. If you watch the fight, he did that jumping sidekick bullshit when the fight each round started.
Started, of course. And he does that in a lot of fights.
And he went for those lazy takedowns. And then when he took him down, he realized, oh shit, Volkov is not actually bad on the ground. That's where he fucked up. Like, that's the moment, because Werdum has the best jujitsu of all the heavyweights.
Yes.
Hands down.
True.
But the problem is that if you take somebody lightly or you don't wear them down, that jujitsu is not going to do a great deal of work, because Volkov is 6'7". He's not a little guy. So he's a lot longer to deal with on the ground. Like, when he was in Volkov's closed guard, Werdum realized, like, holy shit, I can't get around this guy's long-ass legs. It's difficult. Even like guys like Stefan Struve, when you watch them, when they get you in a closed guard, it's a lot of work to try to pass.
Yeah.
And Werdum struggled to pass. Now, Volkov, yes, now all of a sudden he's a title contender. But that doesn't mean Verdum is trash now. Because
I just think he's the it's okay to be a top five gatekeeper, but two more losses and he's in Bellator range.
But he won't have two more losses. Right, unless he's completely washed up.
Keep him away from Francis because he's getting his face knocked off. Derek Lewis, if he connects, probably knock his face off. I think he connects. Curtis Blaydes, the wrestling style versus jiu-jitsu guy might be interesting. But I think Curtis Blaydes might wear his ass out too on the ground.
Man, I don't know, man. Like you're talking about guys who were smaller, who Fabricio – look, Fabricio Werdum beat Cain Velasquez.
Correct.
Choked him out. He knocked out Mark Hunt. Other people didn't do that shit.
So you're saying the size is what helps?
The size – dude, Volkov's size made a world of difference. He's long, he's rangy, he's big. Like, Alistair Overeem is one of the best kickboxers that we've ever seen in heavyweight history.
I think the chin is shaky now.
Come on, man. He got knocked out by Volkov after four rounds, and it was from ground and pound for the most part, and he was tired because he had a bad game plan. Doesn't mean that he's just weak. Look, he played the fool against Stipe by running after him. That was dumb with his hands down.
Correct.
Like, Volkov, I think he took him lightly. Like, Tabura he beat. I think he beats Curtis Blaydes. I think he beats Derek Lewis. There's a lot of people I think that Fabricio Werdum still beats. And the heavyweight division, like, even Francis Ngannou, like, look, if you get inside Ngannou's guard, until Ngannou shows me something else than hitting people in the face really hard, he's beatable.
Okay.
He's very beatable. Bottom line is, heavyweight division is extremely in flux. One guy wins, now he's in the title picture. It doesn't take much to get back into the title picture.
No, it's just, you can only count on it to be in flux for so long. Like, for the first time in a very long time, some younger people are at least coming through the ranks.
But that's my point. It's like the heavyweight division has always been, win a couple of fights, you're in the title picture. And that's literally what happened with Ngannou. Hey, you, win a couple of fights, you're in the title picture. That's all you had to do, win a couple of fights.
He won them emphatically. Yeah, but yes, that's true.
The point is like, you win two or three fights in a row, you're the number one contender. Because until recently, we've never had a champion defend the title three times in a row. Like, even Verdum, when he fought Cain Velasquez, people were like, what? Like, he's going to beat Cain. Yeah, right. And he did. But then, like, you look at the history of it, the title changes hands so often, and the top contenders move around so much. Verdum is the only guy who's been in the top five since the rankings debuted 5 years ago. 5 years ago? I think 5 years ago. He's the only guy who's remained in the top five.
Yeah, that's crazy. Cain's not even ranked.
Yo, where's Junior Dos Santos?
JDS, I don't even see him on my list. He's unranked?
Yeah, I believe it was suspension or inactivity. I can't remember. But my point is that JDS was at the top.
Oh, yeah, he's on injury. Him, Rothwell, Cain.
Like, these are guys who, like, Verdum has always been there. Always.
That's crazy. Yeah, the division is definitely in flux. We'll see. I think he's in that gatekeeper role and not like the good gatekeeper role like Frankie Edgar. I think he's in a bad gatekeeper role. Like where they're going to start trying to turnstile him. Because I don't think it gets easier for him. They're not going to give him a cupcake.
I mean, like, if he faces...
They're not going to give him Arlovski.
They could.
He's on a two-fight winning streak.
Like, Arlovski's fighting Tai Tuivasa, and Tai Tuivasa will probably knock his brains in. Yeah. But it's the heavyweight division. You don't fucking know. I thought Arlovski was going to get his head kicked in by Stefan Struve. That didn't happen.
Travis Brown, is he retired yet? Is he making little Ronda babies? No?
It's possible. The point is, Verdum could fight Curtis Blaydes, and I wouldn't be surprised either way because Curtis Blaydes has showed me a lot. But again, Curtis Blaydes is another guy. It's like, dog, you just won a couple of fights. And now he's a world beater to a lot of people. Like Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis won a fight late. He got a late knockout. But do I think that Verdum could take him down? Yeah, I do. As long as if Verdum fights the right game plan, I think he could beat anybody on any given night. Dude, just 2 years ago, people were talking about him being the greatest heavyweight of all time. Just tells you how quick shit changes in the heavyweight division.
Life comes at you fast. And the belt plays hot potato. So, yeah, that would have been one hell of a streak by him. Until Stipe just derailed his ass.
Yeah. Just a foolish game plan.
All right. Well, that's the UFC. That's pretty much it in a nutshell. We're just trying to relax, man. The next 2 weeks are about to be just the calm before the storm. Because our show for WrestleMania week is going to be packed. And we'll see. I know wild shit's going to happen in UFC and, you know, pro wrestling. People are going to want the podcast quick. We got to digest all this, people. We're going to have a busy week. We got to be working and enjoying ourselves. So make sure you guys stay tuned because that preview show is going to be dope. We got to plan something really good for that. That's the end of today's show, though, sadly. We got to get back to work. Thank you guys for listening. Follow us on social media at The Corner LSN on all platforms. Me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale. Dre, you are back from vacation. You missed out on the snow. Next week, I'm sure you'll get back to your old crotchety self and be a little bit more sour about things. You were very pleasant this week.
Yeah, maybe. I'm going on vacation again, man. I'm going to LA next week.
This guy's never here. Well, we'll catch Dre between his vacationing and make sure we give you guys a podcast. But for now, that is the end. See you guys next week. We're out.
Peace.